Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 9th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 46 years of doing therapy. And these tools are quite gratefully available absolutely free through the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effectiveness in my life for the past 16-plus years, to manage my emotions and to effectively convert any negative emotion that I have into part of that infallible guidance system that each of us has been given. And you can also download the actual worksheet from that webpage. It doesn't require signing up for anything, even getting on a mailing list. Just click on the PDF link, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and those shows can function as a tutorial for you. So, you know, even if tragedy strikes, the archives are there, and you can, if you can't tune into this show when it's on the air, you can listen to the archives, and or you can send us an email with your question, and emailing would be to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, or you can email me directly at tjh at mindshifters-academy.org. And if you send us your question through email, we will address it on one of the shows, and you can go back in the archives and listen to it. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains a reality management worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope you do that soon and often, because you'll more than likely have some questions, and then maybe you'll give us a call and share your questions or your comments, testimonials or refutations at the call-in number 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number. I'll announce you by your area code and we can have a conversation. This is the 99th day of the year, and we have made the commitment to work through the Course in Miracles lessons through the workbook of the Course in Miracles. And today's lesson 99 reads, Salvation is my only function here. Salvation and forgiveness are the same. They both imply that something has gone wrong, something to be saved from, forgiven for, something amiss that needs corrective change, something apart or different from the will of the Creator. Thus, do both terms imply a thing impossible, but yet which has occurred, resulting in a state of conflict seen between what is and what could never be? Truth and illusions are both equal now, for both have happened. The impossible becomes the thing you need forgiveness for and salvation from. Salvation now becomes the borderland between the truth and the illusion. Salvation reflects the truth because it is the means by which you can escape illusions. Yet, it is not yet the truth because it does what was never done. How could there be a meeting place at all where earth and heaven can be reconciled within a mind where both of them exist? The mind that sees illusions thinks them real. They have existed in what they are, thoughts. And yet they are not real because the mind that thinks these thoughts is separate from its creator. What joins the separated mind and thoughts with true mind and true thought, which are forever one? What is the process that can join those things? What plan could hold the truth inviolate, yet recognize the need illusions bring and offer the means by which they are undone, without attack and with no touch of pain? What could do all that but the true thought of the one mind, the true thought of what some would call the Christ mind or the mind of the Creator? In that thought, in that true thought of the Creator, in that true mind energy, which only sees what's actually true, the never done is overlooked, and sins are forgotten which were never real. The Holy Spirit holds the plan of God exactly as it was received of Him within the mind of the Creator and in your own mind. The Holy Spirit is apart from time in that its source is timeless. Yet it operates in time because of your belief that time is real. Unshaken does the Holy Spirit look on what you see. You see sin and pain and death and grief and separation and loss. And the Holy Spirit looks on those things and is completely unshaken. Yet does the Holy Spirit know one thing must still be true. Creation is still love. And this is not love's will. This is the thought that brings illusions to truth and sees them as appearances behind which is the changeless and the sure. This is the thought that saves and forgives because it lays no faith in what is not created by the only source of all creation. Salvation is my only function here. Creation still is love, and this is not creation's will. Whatever I see that generates pictures of fear and anger and guilt and shame and frustration and judgment in my mind, this is not creation's will. This is not a thought in line with all of creation. There's a special message for today which has the power to remove all forms of doubt and fear forever from your mind. If you are tempted to believe them true, remember that appearances cannot withstand the truth that these mighty words contain. Salvation is my only function here. creation still is love, and this is not creation's will. Lesson for today, salvation is my only function here. And then there's Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment. And her title for Lesson 99 is, I Need Do Nothing. She quotes Annie Dillard, who says, we are making hay when we should be making whoopee. We are raising tomatoes when we should be raising cane. Pam writes, like all of us, Kenya Barris, creator of Black-ish, a wildly popular Emmy-winning comedy, was led to believe that if he wanted the goodies, success, acclaim, God's blessings, etc., he must abide by a list of good people rules. He tried. He really did. Until finally, the weight of all the demands became too much to bear. Well, guess what? Even though he broke all the rules, even though he left the conventional path, the blessings kept right on coming. His career took off. Black-ish was nominated for Emmys and People's Choice Awards. He couldn't keep up with all the acclaim. He called it a stunning realization. Grace comes because grace comes. He did not have to earn it. That's why my favorite mantra is this. I need do nothing. The Course says it like this, quote, it would be far more profitable now to merely concentrate on this, I need do nothing, than to consider what you should do. It is the ultimate release that everyone will one day find in his or her own way, in his or her own time. Close quotes. The Course says we can save time by using but this one practice. I need do nothing, it says, in a statement of allegiance, a truly undivided loyalty. Lesson 99 says, it's my one and only function. But here's the good thing. We are already good people. We are already given God's grace. We do not have to earn anything. It's given to all of us. It's our natural state. Once we surrender the, quote, good people, close quotes, rules. I need do nothing. Salvation is my only function here. Creation still is love. And all of this torment and upset and conflict is not creation's will. So that's our lesson and our words from Pam Grout for today. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, you can help us craft the rest of this show. We have 45 minutes left. This is a Friday. We're heading into the weekend. What's on your mind? What would support you? How can we be of service today? 563-999-3581. Ellen, welcome. What are your thoughts today?
Hi, Dr. Tim. I think when you were reading the lesson in the course, did you leave a little bit of it out?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Because I was waiting to hear my favorite line, and I didn't hear it, and I thought, oh, okay.
Okay,
I mean,
what's
it
your
was
favorite
the line?
Line
My favorite line, I mean, what really struck me is, wow, this is just everything, is forgive what you have made and you are saved. And it's bringing together, you know, how it's saying that forgiveness and salvation are the same. But it really, I think it would even read truer if it said, forgive what you think you have made, but that you really haven't, and you are saved.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole point of all of this. And it makes even more sense when you understand the ancient Aramaic definition for the word forgiveness is, or the word that, you know, they translated from the Aramaic into Greek as some word in Greek, and then that got translated into forgiveness in English. But that word is shebag or shebak, and it means to cancel and dismantle. So when it says here, forgive what you have made, what it's saying is dismantle everything you've made. Everything, you know, there's another line from the Course in Miracles that says, perception was made as an attack on God or an attack on creation. Because right. Our perception is a set of pictures that our mind creates and shows us and tries to make us believe is what is really happening in the world. And it's not. It's many levels removed from actuality.
Yes.
So if we breathe into that and we get ourselves to remember, you know, this Course in Miracles book was not written with the benefit of what Dr. Michael Rice would call regulatory speech. But you can rewrite it in your mind. You can remind yourself that the actual definition that the Course gives for forgiveness is to open a curtain in your practice, put away everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, give up everything you think you want, and leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come. Leave a clean and open space for the actuality of life to have an impact on you, which means dismantle all of your perceptions and open to an experience that goes beyond what the stimulation hitting your five senses can give you. So when it says, right. Forgive what you have made and you are saved, it's really saying, give up your false creations and step into the experience of life, you know, from that pure energy that gave rise to you and keeps beating your heart and keeps your food digesting. And that stuff that you cannot experience through your senses.
Right. And I think that's why Byron Katie, you know, what she calls the I don't know mind, is just the mind that's so open, it's not holding on to any concept whatsoever. And then today's lesson talks exactly about that, because it's saying, you know, let the thought that, you know, salvation is my only function here, enter the darkened places of your mind that thought the thoughts that never were as will, and that when you do that, you're letting in the light. And you know, it says, see how bright this light still shines in you. And let the light shine through all the darkened spots to join with the rest. And so it's all saying the same thing. And it just amazes me, because this was not a lesson that really stuck out to me in the past when I did the workbook. But yet when I read it this morning, it was like, I mean, shouldn't we? I can just end here, can't I? Like, I don't know that I need to go any further. And, you know, so many lessons are like that. It's like, this is all you need to know. This is it right here, right? And I'm sure that we had this lesson. I'm sure that we had this lesson previously, too. But when we had it previously, I didn't get from it what, and I think it's the commentary. The commentary of Lesson 99 just speaks to me so clearly. And it's like, what else could I possibly need, you know, to know? Then all I need to do is forgive everything I think that I made, which is everything, you know, basically. I mean,
well,
everything my eyes can see, that's sure.
Right, but not just everything you think you've made, everything you've made. we do not realize how much we are creating our perception. And we think that what we're creating in our perception is the truth of life. We think mistakenly that we are perceiving accurately when we engage our perception. So it's not give up everything you think you've made. It's give up everything you've made. Forgive it, dismantle it.
Right.
Put it aside.
And it just so happens I'm in one of the Course in Miracles groups that I belong to. I mean, the section that we covered in the text that we covered last night was all about how the eyes were made not to see, and that the body's eyes will never see. And it was all about that, because what made the body's eyes made them to experience separation. So, which is not God's will. So, of course, everything that comes from that part of the mind cannot be real. And so here we are. It cracks me up, though. It's like getting that cosmic joke. It's just like, it's so funny. It's like, oh, all this stuff. Oh, I got to do all this work. And I got to forgive everyone. I got to forgive myself. And then you realize that it's for nothing. I mean, really, for nothing. And none of this stuff ever really happened. So it's like you take on all the responsibility just to realize, wow, it's a responsibility for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I had a person recently who was brand new and just learned the short version of the reality management worksheet. And he came back after a week and a half, 2 weeks of using it, and he said, you know, it's just the weirdest thing. When I use that tool, then I can't figure out what I was angry about. And I keep wondering, well, what was I seeing that made me so angry? The answer is nothing. I was seeing false creations. I was seeing image manufacturing rather than what's actually there. I just turned on the microphone for your friend Susan.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. To begin with, I just have to say I might be interrupted momentarily. I am in charge of picking up my grand dog at a vet after an operation and could get a call literally any second. But I had the thought, well, then here's the crucifixion. God didn't intend that. So...
Here's the what?
Here's the question. How much did you hear?
I heard you say, here's the crucifixion.
Yeah, there's the crucifixion. God would never intend such a thing because God doesn't intend pain, illness, cruelty, anything. So I'm just thinking, what do we do with the crucifixion then?
Well, to begin with, you started off letting us know that you'd gone down the rabbit hole because you said, I'm thinking.
Right.
And there's your problem right there. There you go. I would offer, you don't have to go to the crucifixion. You got pain and suffering and misery in your own life that you're creating day in and day out.
Right.
And what I just said about this person that I introduced to the reality management worksheet, and a week and a half, 2 weeks later, he comes back and he says, yeah, I don't know how that thing works, but after I do a worksheet when I get really angry, and then I look at what's going on, and I wonder, what was I getting upset about? I can't even I can't even find a way to think about it that it would generate that much anger. So it isn't God doing this stuff. It's us creating the drama and the trauma. It's us creating the dream of separation and then living from it as though it were actuality.
Yeah, living right. from it as if we are the dream self instead of the dreamer. It's like when you're in the dream at night, you know, you think you're really the person in the dream. You don't realize, no, all of this is completely made up. It's coming from my own mind, the dreamer's mind. It's exactly the same thing at the what we call the waking reality. We just wake up to a bigger dream. It's a longer dream. But it's the exact same thing. And so that's why it's such a relief to wake up, because just like how it is when you wake up from a nightmare and you go, oh, my goodness. Oh, my, so glad that wasn't real.
And or for some of us, I wonder what message that has for me. And it's the same thing. So, Susan, two things. The first thing was you started off by saying, I'm thinking, and then talking about, you know, God wouldn't have wanted the crucifixion, so how'd that happen? So the thinking is, you know, I'm trying to figure it out. So that's one trap you were into. And the other one is that trap of taking things literally that are probably most useful as a parable or a metaphor rather than a literal. What?
She said, that's my issue, taking things literally.
I don't want to take that one. Yeah, okay, I'm taking it.
Well, are you having selective memory? You don't know how many times you and I have been down that road together?
Yeah, no, yes, no, yeah. Right.
And I keep discovering how much we have in common.
I know. I haven't even answered that email because, I mean, that text, because I wanted to say, don't start, you know, just so many things. Yeah, we're like twins. Oh, my God.
But it just goes to show, I mean, but it's like that with everyone. It's just, I mean, we're all really the same when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I have offered at different times before. My way of formulating it is to say that the only significant difference between me and anybody who's ever lived or ever will live is the degree to which we are able to live from the realization that we're all the same.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
True. Yeah.
And to really take this lesson in, I mean, literally, right? It's my only function. Salvation is my only function here. You know, I mean, we live our lives, at least I did most of my life, wondering, what am I here for? What is this all about? What am I to do? What is my purpose? And floundering around and just doing things that I didn't really even want to do because I didn't know what to do. And then, you know, to find out that, wow, the only reason I came here was for salvation, to save myself and to save the world. That's it.
And the word salvation, thank goodness the lesson says salvation is the same as forgiveness, because the word salvation, it's a stumbling block word for me. It doesn't digest, but forgiveness does. The Aramaic forgiveness does. So I don't even use the word salvation.
Yeah, well, there's a substitute.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's it. Like, so all this other stuff that feels such a burden to me, I mean, yeah, that's why you need do nothing. I mean, it's Oh, because what we came here to do never even really happened. So it's that's why there's really nothing to do, nothing to be done. It's just a realization, a recognition, a waking up to reality. That's it.
That's good, because with Pam Grout, when she says, I thought, has she got her numbers wrong? I need do nothing. Wait a minute, let me check back. Back and forth I go. And I think, how does that connect with my function as forgiveness and salvation? And you just made the connection, Ellen. I was picturing that my function is forgiveness, which means I have a heck of a lot of work to do. So I was having to do a heck of a lot of stuff. So you took it.
But there's really nothing to forgive. That's the whole thing.
I'm trying to get there.
It's all made up. And so all you need to do is forgive yourself for thinking that, for making it up, for thinking that you actually made something real. And, you know, believing it. That's it. You
well,
didn't
but
do
it's not,
it, actually.
Let's be careful there and state it a little bit more accurately, Ellen. It's not forgive myself. It's dismantle what I have falsely believed I created. Dismantle my false perception. Because forgiveness in this work means to dismantle.
Right.
To let go
well,
of, to drop. And you said forgive yourself for what you've created, and I'm saying, no, you forgive what you have created. Not forgiving yourself. You don't dismantle yourself. You dismantle the belief that what you have created falsely is accurate, is real.
Right, but that kind of, to me, means forgive myself for thinking that I did that, you know. But the way I see it, like, it's all from pure innocence. So there again, it's there really isn't no forgiveness is necessary. At least that's the way I see it. I see the
I'm just trying to help you clarify the difference in this work between using the word forgiveness to mean dismantle something and using the word forgiveness to mean to pardon someone for having done something wrong or grievously errant.
No.
And so,
I don't
and so pardoning, we should pardon ourselves for having made this error in perception, but we don't forgive ourselves. We forgive the false creation in perception. One more thing I wanted to add is that The Way of Mastery, Part 2 in that second book, there's a section titled, Your One Function, and this was sparked by you, Ellen, talking about how we run around wondering, you know, what is our purpose here, etc. The title of this section is, Your One Function is to Bless Creation. The short paragraph after that says, the function of the Holy Child of God remains eternally one, to bless creation and thereby restore it to the perfect reflection of the Creator's presence. And creation is but love. Love embraces all things and trusts all things. Love is the nature of your being. When you finally choose to awaken wholly by welcoming love back into your mind and by becoming committed to resisting and resting only, not resisting, committed to resting only in loving thoughts, you will discover that illusions are just that. They contain no existence. You have been resting in the holy mind of the Creator eternally. Your one function is to bless creation. Now that's from Way of Mastery in the second book, and I hope you can see the similarity between that and the Course in Miracles lesson 99. Salvation
Absolutely.
Is my only function here, and creation is still love, and this is not love's will.
That reminds me, Susan, of what your cousin said in our meeting the other day about, I forget what was going on in her life, and she just got so upset, and she just cried out, "What am I to do?" And she felt like hands took her face, literally took her face in, like, you know, someone's hand and put her in a position to be staring at this tiny little flower that was, you know, at her feet. And it was just, notice me, like that was it. All she needed to do was notice, bless. I'm thinking, you know, it's the same thing as blessing, because when you see the beauty, what can you do but want to bless it? And so it's all about, yeah, where do we put our attention? What are we focusing on? What are we, you know? And to always look for the blessing in everything.
That's good. You know, the business of blessing is an action. You connected the looking at the flower with making it similar or the same as blessing. And that's a very nice thought, because to me, blessing feels like, in some cases, quite an exertion, because I have such a judging, critical, dark side in myself. When I see someone doing something I disapprove of or triggers something, I'll often remember to bless them. But the blessing doesn't come with any emotion. It comes with just an intention. And sometimes it's grudging, because I haven't done any work on this. This requires a worksheet, and I'm walking in the park. So noticing, really noticing, could be the first step toward a blessing, or even a blessing is what you're saying, right, Ellen? I like that idea. What do you think, Dr. Kim?
Yeah, and I just want to point out that that's exactly, I remember a line from Byron Katie's book, the one that we're reading right now, and where she's like, everything, right? Everything is such a blessing and a joy to her, and she says, all I ever did was notice it. Like, she didn't have to earn it. All she had to do was notice it.
Yeah, nice.
We're so hard, or at least I have been so hard on myself, and I see that, you know, and really in everyone.
And that is the gift, and that is the blessing, to just be with, to allow, to accept, to surrender, to see it for, in see it, whatever it is, the flower, the person you're with, to see them in their highest and best, and then choose to cooperate only with that. That definition for humility from the ancient Aramaic, to my mind, is just like the definition for a blessing, to see the highest and best in that person, in that energy in my heart space, and send it out.
Great connection.
And I just remembered what came to me this morning. I think it was my first 5-minute practicing of today's lesson, was seeing that, you know, the form is never the thing, right? The form is never what is of value. And then if you take like a step further back, you say, well, is the value in the person that created the form? Like, I was thinking of like a wonderful piece of architecture. Clearly, I mean, we can admire it, but the value isn't in the actual physical structure. And then I looked back and it was like, okay, so it, is it in the mind of the person that created it? And then I saw, well, it goes back. I mean, that mind was inspired with that idea. And so it always goes back to the source of that inspiration. That's where the value is. I think we get so caught up in the world of form and we don't see that the value is not at all in the form. It's in the inspiration that we, you know, I was seeing like a seed of inspiration being planted in like the fertile soil of an open mind. You know, I mean, that's how those seeds of inspiration sprout, is because we're not in a thinking mind all the time, thinking all this stuff and believing all this stuff and holding all these concepts, this is true and this is not and whatever. It's just having that open mind that can accept. And I know, Susan, I mean, my goodness, you compose music, so you've gotten a lot of inspiration. And I've experienced it. But that's the real... where the value
just
comes from.
Susan is signing off. She has to go deal with her dog. There's something in what you just said, Ellen, that reminds me of one of the lines from the Way of Mastery where it says, the only relationship, this is very simply stated, and it's meant to be inclusive and absolute like this, the only relationship that has any value in your life is your relationship with your Creator. And then it goes on to say, so the ego will kick up quite a fuss, but what about my children and what about my true love and what about, and it goes on to say, none of that is possible until you have a true relationship with your Creator. And I don't know exactly what it was about your comments that brought that to mind, but the only relationship that has any value is your relationship with your Creator. Go ahead.
Right, because everything comes from that mind of God. That's where the value is, and we get to be the vehicles of expression through being open to the inspiration that's coming from that mind. So, yes, everything that's ever been created has come from that one mind of the Creator. So, yeah, I think that is the only real relationship of value. I mean, you have to have that. If you don't have that,
well, yeah,
then...
And we don't think about it. We're not taught about it. We're taught, you know, about our egoic self, and we're taught to value that egoic self and sense of self. But at this other deeper level, at another level of scale, none of that would be there without the relationship with the creative forces that brought me into existence and brings everyone else into existence.
Exactly. So when I can, if I can look at like something like I was just saying, like a beautiful piece of architecture, and recognize that not only the value isn't in that. Yes, it's very beautiful. The value is, you know, in the mind of God, and it just happened to be picked up by someone whose mind was open enough to receive the inspiration for it. And since we're all one, like, there's no reason for me to think that, oh, well, I couldn't do that, right? I mean, we all have the ability to be inspired in whatever way that we're meant to be inspired. And it's just having an open mind. And I can look at every person's work of art and think, wow, that belongs to me too. Like, that's all part of the relationship with the Creator. And every relationship with the Creator, I'm one with.
Yeah, there's a level at which these teachings talk about how if it wasn't in me, I couldn't appreciate it. I couldn't even have the resonance to appreciate it.
Right.
So we had somebody else raise a hand. Like, are you at a point where it's good to bring somebody else in, or did you want to add something else?
No, I was just going to say there was one level further out, like if you would take a photograph. It's like taking a photograph of something that you think is beautiful, and we do this, right? Our culture is like photo crazy these days, right? And then it's like you're valuing this photograph, and it's like, well, that's not the real thing. It's just a photograph of the real thing. But no, the thing you took the photograph of isn't the real thing either. You have to keep going back further until you get to the mind of God and go, oh, that's where the value is. That's the real thing.
There you go. There you go. All right. So area code 541.
Yes, this is Linda.
Hold on, Ellen. All right. I left your microphone on, Ellen, just in case Linda had a comment for you. So go ahead, Linda.
Yes, I do have a comment for all of us. First of all, I was listening to the show from the beginning, and I really appreciate Susan, your and Susan's input. I value you two very much, and Dr. Tim, of course. We couldn't do this all without your help. We just thank you. My observation is there's a danger in saying the form has no value, because our Creator is using that form, and as I understand it, that form is the avenue or the medium or the vessel in which life expresses itself. Now, whether the Garden of Eden was a non-form state or not, I have no idea. I just know that one of the things I love about the Buddhist path is living in the paradox, living in the I don't know, living in the middle path of saying, let's embrace both of this. Because I'll tell you, if I didn't value the flower, I wouldn't be looking at it. And I see a lot of people who don't. They don't value the flower. They don't value the essence of the flower that might be captured in a photograph, or they may put that on their wall, but they're not in the garden. They're in some urban environment, and that's the best they can do, because when they look at that flower, their imagination, their perceptions steps in. So I would give both of those their proper valuable place in this moment. I have no idea about truth with a capital T. I only have what I trust and have faith as my guidance, the holy breath, that spirit within myself, that breath within myself, that is that elemental feminine, which I happen to love, essence and energy that guides me and protects me and blesses me. And so I just offer that perspective. It's just another way of looking at things. And it also allows me, if I value my body as the vehicle for the Creator to express in this dimension, if this is the dimension that the Garden of Eden was, I have no idea, then I will take care of it. But if I think, this body, this form, it has no value, then I'm going to abuse it in all kinds of ways that I may not even realize. So I just offer that a perspective for what it's worth. You're welcome to trash can it or put it on the shelf or roll it over and look at it. It's up to you. And thank you for all of the ideas you've given me to roll over and put on this shelf and take and put in the trash and maybe dig back out again. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. I wouldn't have put that spin on what Ellen was saying, that what I would have gotten from what Ellen is saying is that the true value is what underlies all of it. And so you know, when we have the ability to recognize, I was put in mind of a piece from the book by The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner, where at one point it talks about how there's no true thought in a human being until after the human being recognizes the presence of divine thought in his or her mind. And what my mind does with that is say, oh, yeah, I've got to remember that I didn't create myself, and I don't know when I was created. And so all of this, in my ability to be here, et cetera, is a miracle of creation expressing in form. And this conscious logical mind that, you know, we call Tim Hayes, that has these memories from childhood and adolescence and everything, had nothing to do with any of that. And so once I get in touch with that divine presence, then true thought is possible. But if I think I'm the one in charge and I think I'm actually creating my thoughts and creating myself or whatever, then I'm not experiencing the truth of it. I'm not experiencing it at what Guy Finley would call at a level of scale that gets to depth. So I wouldn't
that.
Have interpreted, yeah, I wouldn't have interpreted what Ellen said as saying nothing has any value, just like when in the quote that I recited from the Way of Mastery, where it says the only relationship in your life that has any value is your relationship with your creator. Well, it doesn't mean that at a certain level of scale there's no value in my relationship with my children. Or it means that until I've got this good, solid, true connection with my source, those other relationships can't flower, can't produce fruit.
I like that very much, and I think that was where I was wending toward. Well, maybe I think is the wrong word. What my emotional feeling was underneath what I was saying is what I understand you saying, in that unless we have this relationship with the divine, unless we really get it, we grok it in the old terms of the 1970s, if we really, really get it in our physiology, then we would value the form naturally, because we are seeing it transformed in its most basic actuality as life expressing itself, regardless of how it shows up. Reminds me of when St. Francis was on a trail and ran into a leper, and Francis was extremely, extremely terrified of lepers. And he came on the trail, and it was, okay, now what do I do? Because there was nowhere to go. And life just told him, embrace the leper. And it was when he embraced the leper that the full flowering of his actualization of who he was became conscious for him. And that may be similar to what you're describing.
It might be. It might be.
Yeah, I just want to add that I think for me, like, I have been in love with form all my life. I mean, especially nature, flowers. I mean, oh my goodness, I grow flowers like crazy. But if we think that everything, like all the beauty that we see in the flowers is in the form, then that's where we suffer when the flower dies, you know, or the body dies, and it doesn't really die, but, you know, so it's yes, I agree. There's such beauty in the form and what we can see in the form, but that's not where the beauty comes from. We can't ever lose the beauty. We can lose the form, but we can't ever lose the beauty. And so there's great, I don't know, there's just a great relief, you know, once you really understand that, like, you can't lose anything of value. And whatever, you know, created that form of that flower, it's still there, right? It's still there as potential within the creator. So it can't ever be lost. It can appear and it can disappear in form, but it can't ever be lost. And once you start recognizing that divinity that's in everything that just is putting on this show, this play, and recognize it's not just the beautiful things that we see, but everything, it's just a play. And to not get caught up in that, because that's not where reality resides.
That is very sweet, Ellen, because what I had a vision of when you were saying that was the quantum physics field and observer. And the observer collapses the field into a form by putting the attention on it. And that's how we co-create our collective visioning and our collective reality, is the same way we do it with our individual selves. It's all energy. Thank you. That was the missing dot for me. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. You've definitely, yeah.
Now, were you part of the intensive, Ellen, last time?
No, this work of Michael Rice's is brand new to me. I joined Susan's Zoom meeting, Mindshifters group, maybe 2 months ago, I want to say something
okay.
like that. Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering
it was actually before that, because it must have been in December, because that's when Susan told me that Dr. Tim was going to be doing the Course in Miracles starting on January 1st, and I already had plans on starting it again on January 1st. I never started it on January 1st before, but I was, one of my Course in Miracles groups was going to start it as a group. So I thought, oh, great, I'm going to do it. And so when Susan told me Dr. Tim was going to do it, and I had never been on and listened to the radio show, so that's when I started listening. So, yeah, it must have been December when I joined Susan's group. So, and I'm so grateful because I always just did the course on my own. I never really even discussed it with anyone. So this has been wonderful for me to be able to do it with my other group, to do it with Dr. Tim and his listeners, and so I'm very grateful.
Cool. Thank you so much.
All
it's
right.
Really
well, thank
great
you both.
We have
expended our time, so I will mute you, but I thank you both for your willingness to call in and question and make comments, and the same for Susan Bingham. Hope her mission to pick up her dog works smoothly. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And with any luck, Jeannie Rice will turn on her microphone
here.
And join us. Welcome.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Appreciate
it. Have a great show and a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too, Dr. Tim. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, April the 9th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And so we'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. There will be some changes going on the website shortly. I think I have announced that before. And I'm talking with a friend of ours who they actually host the website on their server. And she helps me whenever we make some major changes or anything. She's just awesome tech support. And so she has, she's going to quote me on changing our site over from being on Joomla to being on WordPress. So it's supposed to be easier to maintain and handle, but the switchover part is probably going to be a learning lesson for me. So you all just let me know if you find something that's not working and be patient and then send me an email or a text and let me know what you find. And it would be greatly appreciated. And we have set up to do a special class. Hold just a moment. My apologies there. Technical difficulty getting Michael signed in. So anyway, if you run across something that doesn't work or whatever, but, you know, like I said, just give us a little bit of time because I'm not sure how long the switchover is going to be. And she's been trying to talk me into doing this for some time, and I just told her I didn't have time on my plate to do it. So she's offered to quote me to do the switchover, and so that should be happening pretty soon. So hold the space for that to go smoothly. It's a huge website, lots and lots of pages, lots of information, and so anything that makes it better, I'm all for. And so with that, we will welcome Michael to the show. And maybe he hasn't got his microphone going yet. Okay, he said he's trying to get in still. So those that are in the intensive, we have added an additional class tomorrow. And it will be for 2 hours from 1 to 3 o'clock Eastern time. And do some catch up. And we've been talking about the last videos that you've gotten have been on responsibility communication. And we actually have a couple of volunteers that have a real live issue, and they're volunteering to do the responsibility communication with each other. So we're doing that on Saturday and doing Mind Shifters on Saturday. And so stay with us. And Michael got in and then went out. So he's having some trouble there with his phone. But anyway, and then we're coming up on, we're taking Susan's suggestion, the new worksheet, and actually put it into a practicum. And so we're looking at doing that next week. And then the week after, on the 21st, we are going to be doing Still Point Breathing. So those that were in the first or second intensive can join us with that. All right. Welcome, Michael.
Yes, rock and roll. Lots going on. And I'm excited about it. It's awesome to have this opportunity to move these tools forward layer by layer, level by level, and then especially the fact that we're getting to video all of this, and we've got all of this in the can, so to speak, and that they're going to make the found these videos. Right now we're getting up around 83 hours of video that will become available for the next self-study intensive and be the foundation for the next live intensive that we do. So there'll be two ways to have permanent access to this 83-hour live event where we've had anywhere from, I guess we've had something in the range of, 22 or 23 people, Jeannie, to 30-plus. So pretty awesome interaction, question-answer, a lot of process work, and all of that is live and would become permanently available for the foundation of our next intensive and the next time we do the codependence to independence communication practicum. Of course, we will have all of that video available, And then we'll do another 28 hours. So we'll just keep building that library. And right now, once we get this complete, we'll have a self-study course available where you can purchase access to permanent use of those 83 hours and all the worksheets and all the material and the food program and a personal code evaluation. The cost of that will be $600. That's going to cover everything. And then should you choose to, the next time we do that workshop live, you'll be able to upgrade to that live workshop. So you'll have still the next layer, the next level. Only that will be the live workshop, of course, we'll do another 28 hours of live interaction as well as the self-study. So I'm excited about how that's coming together and the potential for doing that with all of our intensives. In this particular one, we've got Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Healing Through Relationships. You know, what will it look like when I heal? We've got a two-hour video on the personal code evaluation. Communication, did you hear what I think I said? Mind shifters and still point breathing. So it's a pretty comprehensive package that it's going to come together with the next round. So excited that you're here to be with us as part of it. And our reading today from Why Is This Happening to Me Again takes us to the end, actually the last couple of paragraphs, on page 53. So if you're following along with us in the book, if you turn to page 53, if you don't have the book, you can usually find a copy of it pretty cheaply, $2, $3, $4, $5 on Amazon or on eBay. And the book is out of print at this moment. And so you can do that, or you can go to our website. You can download a free copy, and you'll be with us as we cover these topics. And we're in Chapter 9 on the topic of blockage of truth. And we've been talking about how stress elevates when truth shows up, and we've blocked truth. So somebody is living in the lie, and you know, the most common lie is, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid. You know, if our mind is presenting us a perceptual construct that says that our mind is absolutely, totally, completely, 1,000% lying to us. And when truth starts to come forward, become available, stress goes up. And there are two places when we're in blockage of truth that our stress will attach. And it's up to us as to which one we're going to allow to happen. Stress is either going to attach to getting rid of the source of the information. Oh, you have caused me more stress. And so the impetus will be, I need to get rid of you, or I need to get rid of, you know, what you're showing me. Or we can consciously, purposely shift the process and attach our stress to looking inside and removing the root of the elevated stress. It's totally up to the individual which one they want to do. Of course, if you don't know that the reason your stress is up is because truth is showing up and you're in blockage of truth, it'll take a little time to build the brain cells to go, oh, there's something different happening here, then it's all their fault. Oh my goodness, what a radical idea. And of course, you know, if you listen to the conversation of the generations, the conversation of the generations is pretty much about how you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, they upset me, that disturbed me. And blockage of truth is the lie that the brain generates in order to follow our instructions to keep the truth hidden from us. And so we've been talking with Richard about this idea of blockage of truth, the character in the book. And the minute that I pointed out to him that one of his perceptual constructs was a fraud, of course, his stress goes up. And one of the ways you can tell that stress is going up, if you're not really paying attention to your mind, is, as we saw here with Richard, is Richard wants drugs. So instantly, when stress marks through, it's like, where's the coffee? Where's the caffeine? Where's the nicotine? hey, I want a fifth of scotch. Give me a cigarette. So that's one of the ways you can tell that your mind is going into an elevated stress state. So Richard replies as I talk to him about how we anesthetize ourselves with drugs. He says, I've heard that caffeine is hard on the pancreas and adrenals and that smoking contributes to disease processes, but I am sure that medical researchers will solve that problem. I've smoked for years and it hasn't hurt me, insisted Richard. I didn't bother to point out that his hacking cough and shortness of breath was a problem for him. In the ancient Aramaic, there was a statement that when something like where your treasure is, there will be your heart also. That idea means that we will form cunning defenses and protective mechanisms that shield from the conscious mind the results of whatever we have decided to do, especially if our behavior is self-destructive. So the mind can rationalize anything, and, you know, it's a good thing to remember that ration lies. You know, the mind, you know, David Bohm says the mind can play a thousand tricks on us, has a thousand ways of fooling us. And that's one of the reasons why you'll oftentimes hear me say, especially if somebody's in disturbance, you got to be out of your mind. You got to loosen the grip that your mind has on you in order to get conscious and function once again as a human being. And so the cunning defenses, the stories the mind can tell, and I've watched people over the years tell themselves those stories. I've watched people who, you know, came into a place where they went, yeah, I realize I've got work to do, and they start to do that work. And then they decide, oh, well, you know, I'm finished. It's all done now. I've got it all handled. And that's usually the point at which the next layer is going to come up. And they want to turn tail and run. And actually, I've seen people run away from doing their work and, I mean, literally watched it kill them. So it's a good thing to understand how the mind plays its games, what its games are, and then wake up from its process. And, of course, we're here to create an infrastructure for waking up, a set of tools, how to understand working through everything that is less than love until we arrive at the place where we truly function as human beings. And so that's my thought for the day and our introduction to the book. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, on both accounts. It is very
okay.
Quiet.
Well, you were mentioning about the communication process that we're going to do tomorrow, and I am much appreciative of the fact that Miss Magda is going to be doing that along with Chuck. I know that, I go back, I'm not sure how long ago it is, probably 7 or 8 years ago when Magda was at Heartland doing an intensive and we introduced that tool. And she pretty quickly made it known that that was one of her favorites. And I know she's done a lot of work with it over the years. So it'll be awesome to have her as as one of the participants. And, of course, she and Chuck have worked with it for years together. So it'll be a great demonstration in tomorrow's intensive. So I'm looking forward to that. Excited that we're getting that extra session in tomorrow. It'll give us an extra couple of hours for the intensive archive, too. So if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? If you're not using the forgiveness tools, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. If you click the link in the upper left-hand corner, it says start here, you will be looking at a whole series of links that will walk you through everything that we've learned in the last half century about forgiveness, how it's done, and to recognize that it has nothing to do, forgiveness has nothing whatsoever to do with what our culture teaches us is forgiveness. It's just the biggest con job in the world to think that by letting somebody else outside of me off the hook for what's happening inside of me, I'm going to change what's happening inside of me. I mean, it's just on its face, it's blatantly silly to say, so I forgive you, I let you off the hook, and that's going to change the part of my mind that's producing my pain. I mean, look at that logically for just a second, and it makes no sense whatsoever. But, and it just, I mean, it amazes me that for, I mean, look back at the centuries. Look at all the giant minds, and this shows what happens and why it's so important to really have access to the accurate words about anything, sourced whatever that anything is, in this case, forgiveness. You know, to understand the process, it took me years of working with the first century Aramaic definitions of Yeshua's words to understand that when he said, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother, he wasn't doing a bleeding heart, but forgive from your heart, you know, that sort of thing. He was saying, you must remove, the word forgive means remove from your heart, and the word in Aramaic that's been translated as heart is unconscious. You must remove from your unconscious that painful, traumatic energy that you've used to build your brain's image of your brother. You've got to remove that. And, you know, a significant number of the tools that I've developed over the decades have been dedicated to understanding and accessing the hidden parts of the mind so that they could be removed. You know, if I don't know it's there, if I believe, if I really truly believe that you're the reason I'm in pain, and you know, so often I'll have somebody who'll tell me, yeah, well, you know, it's all, I mean, all Charlie's fault, all Bill's fault, all Harry's fault. I say, okay, so let me see now. How long have you known Harry? Oh, gee, I've known Harry for 5 years. Now, tell me in detail the quality of pain you're experiencing, and they'll go through the details of how it feels. And I'll say, now, let's go back 6 years ago. Did you know this quality of pain that you're now saying that Harry caused you? 100% of the time, if people are honest, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, I did, but it really is his fault. Well, let's go back 10 years before you knew Harry. Did you know this quality of pain? 100% of the time, yes. How about 20 years before you knew Harry? Yes. So now you're really going to try to convince me that a pain you had developed and you were experiencing 2 decades before you ever met the man is now his fault that it's moving inside of you. Pretty silly on its face. And so, obviously, if I really believe that Harry is the cause of my pain, then I've probably pretty deeply hidden the part of my mind that I'm using to project that pain into my brain's image of him. And so the work is about uncovering. It's the detail work of that. Sometimes people will call that complexity, but it's not complex. It's really very simple. But it is detail-oriented. It does take looking at the details, and it does take moving through those layers and those levels of hidden parts of the mind so that you can literally remove from your unconscious that which you've built into your brain's image of your brother. And so we're here to support awakening from that process, learning how to access the hidden parts of our own minds. And, you know, every tool that we teach is related to accessing those hidden parts of the mind. You know, one of the most profound and most powerful tools, you know, before we go into the still point breathing process, when we do an intensive, we always give people a mind shifter. And the mind shifter is a tool that's designed to uncover directly hidden parts of the mind. And so when people do the mind shifter tool before they go into still point breathing, it stirs up hidden parts of the mind. And one of the things we ask people to do when they do a mind shifter is really observe what's happening with the breath, because when the mind shifter starts to resonate or move the hidden part of the mind, because the breath has been used to hold that hidden, the breath will spontaneously stop. I mean, just out of the blue, it stops. And if I begin to observe my breath, I will realize that wherever I'm holding my breath, there's a part of my mind that I'm hiding from myself. And just about every one of the tools that we've developed is, how do you get back to direct interaction with that part of the mind? And if we don't ever allow ourselves to directly access it, then whenever that part of the mind is resonated into activity, you know, and it can be something silly. You can be sitting, you know, maybe you're sitting reading a book, and somebody in the other room has got a TV on, and somebody on the television set makes a comment that you don't even consciously hear. But all of a sudden, you kind of clutch your throat, you find yourself sort of gasping for breath, and your chest is tight, and you go, geez, I don't know what's happening here. Well, literally, the frequency of that voice coming out of the television in the other room was all it took to resonate. Remember, the brain, the mind works through the law of resonance. And law of resonance says that when two energy fields are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an exchange of information between them. So when that statement was made on the TV, even though we weren't in the room, even though we weren't watching or listening to the TV, our ears still heard it, and it can set in motion that old hidden unconscious dynamic. And so each of the tools is designed to open and clean out those unconscious parts so that the mind, rather than our controller, becomes just a device that holds information for us and acts as a servant. A servant rather than controlling us. You've listened to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he talks about the master bound by the servants in his own household. Well, your household is your body, mind, unit. That's your temple. That's your home. And your servants are meant to be your thoughts, your emotions, your physiology. But if you are bound by the servants, if they run your life, especially, and you'll notice how often for most people, their life is being run by a part of their mind that's totally against their will and choice. They'll say, well, I apologize for doing that. That was terrible, and I will never do that again. People can say that till the cows come home, and they really mean it. But when the stress is up and the chips are down, if that part of the mind has not been directly accessed and healed, no matter how many times I've said, I'll never do that again, it's going to come up and I'm going to do it again. If it has been a dynamic that has run my behavior, and usually those dynamics are power person dynamics. Remember our definition of a power person, or the three principles involved in establishing a power person dynamic in a mind are: one, there was a person who had more power for your life than you did. Two, they were not functioning as a human being. They were not functioning out of love. And three, you perceived that your survival was threatened. When those three things occur, then this human energy field opens wide. I mean, just like just laid bare and becomes exactly like a sponge. Whatever energies, it doesn't matter if it's hate or fear or rage or guilt or whatever's moving the environment, when those conditions are met, the subject of that situation has their energy field open, and they just take in all of the energetic dynamics involved in the environment. You know, and let's say it's a power person raging at a small child. what happens 30 years later when the stress is up and the chips are down for that person who was a small child but now is 6'6", 280-pound, muscle-bound. I was thinking of what word to use to describe someone when they're under the influence of the power person state. And here's this person who just, when the conditions are met, when the energy field is opened in that sort of a situation, they'll literally just pour out the rage that was poured into them decades before. Afterwards, they'll be shocked, horrified. Oh, my God, I can't believe I did that. How many times have you heard somebody say that? Boy, my dad, my mom used to do that to me. And, oh, I hated it when they did that to me. I don't understand why I'm doing that to them. And it's somebody else in your life today. It's really very simple. When the power person dynamic is instilled in a mind, we might even say installed in a mind, those three conditions are met, and it's just, there it is. And then under stress, there are only three levels of behavior possible. Actually, the level of stress determine which behaviors we're going to do. When there's no stress, we'll do what we did to get along with our power person. When stress starts to build, we'll do what we did to resist and survive with our power person. And then when we become ultra-stressed, we'll do what our power person did to us that we hated the most. Or we will be motivated to do what our power person did that we hated the most, although we may have the self-control to inhibit that. Remember years ago we were in Fort Lauderdale doing a workshop series. There was a gentleman there who had been in the AA program for about 30 years, and he ran a large website working with AA folks. And he asked me to come and speak to, Jeannie and I, to come and speak to his group. And when I presented this idea, he afterward was almost a little bit insulted and said, well, that's just not true, Michael, because when I was a kid, my father was horribly abusive. I mean, physically horribly abusive on almost a daily basis, hit, you know, beat, torture almost. And he said, and I had a son, and I never hit my son. And I said, yeah, I hear you. So I congratulate you on having the ability to withhold that. But how much time do you still spend having to control your fist? You know, it's like he almost melted into a puddle. It's like, oh my God, every day I have to inhibit myself from lashing out. So here's what uncovering the power person dynamic and forgiveness would do for him. It would allow him to access those parts of the mind, forgive, that is, remove, clean out those parts of mind, and he wouldn't have to be controlling his fists anymore. But here he is. Here's a guy in his 60s, and for decades he's been holding back, struggling with himself, trying to keep from hitting people, which is what his power person did to him. And you look at, you know, the violence that's been erupting in our society recently, and you can see exactly what people's power persons have been doing to them. And it's time for us to soften and get back to functioning as human beings, to start to open this, what was called the veil of the temple, the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind, and remove the unconscious energetic dynamics of hostility and fear from the mind, from our physiology, because that's where those dynamics are stored. Free physiology from those disease processes and free the mind and the emotions from those disease processes. And so in a nutshell, that's what we're here to support happening with this work. And I can only imagine with that explanation, what we've covered in about the last half hour or so, has got to arouse questions for refinements in most everybody listening. So if you're out there in listener land, especially if you're holding your breath. What's your question? How can we support you? What's on your mind? How can we refine what I just explained to give you deeper insight or deeper access to the healing of those parts of your mind if they exist? So what's your question? Push one. If you're in on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push one, that will raise a hand in the phone queue. Gene will know you want to speak to us. And we'll be having a conversation. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room? Anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up?
There are no hands up, and it is all quiet in the chat room. So,
Well, I can't imagine that this explanation hasn't aroused some kind of thought or question from anybody. So, if you're out there in listener land, let's have a conversation. How can we support you?
And we have 28 minutes, so we've got plenty of time.
Yes, plenty of time. Any thoughts for you, Jeannie? Anything moving in your mind right now that might take us in a direction that might open somebody putting a hand up?
I actually need to run downstairs. Dad just called me and is like, where am I and where are you? And I said, I'm on the radio show. I said, but if you need something, I'll come down. He goes, no, I just don't know where I am. So I'm going to run downstairs real quick and
sounds
just
like
hold
he's
the space.
A little confused. Okay, we'll hold the space, yep. Baby, and I'll move forward.
So if someone press one, Michael would have somebody to talk to while I'm downstairs.
Yeah, I would. That would be fun. And if not, that's okay. I can talk to myself. I've done
okay.
It before a few times.
Okay,
sweetie.
Okay. I'll be
hold
back up in just a minute.
So Jeannie's dad, we basically take care of him. We have been doing that for about 2 years now. He got to the point where his short-term memory kind of disappeared, and he had difficulty. Well, he just got to the point where he couldn't live on his own. And for the rest of the family, it was going to be, you know, a nursing home was going to be about the only option for him. And Jeannie and I were not prepared to allow that to happen, so we stopped traveling and moved to Bristol, Virginia, and he's lived in his home for over 50 years, same home. Wasn't about to leave, so we moved in with him, and we take care of him. And then 3 days a week, of course, we have Arya Rain, who's napping right now. So it's an interesting set of bookends. Arya Rain's 29 months, and Dad's 88, and sometimes he just kind of gets to this confused place. You know, usually one of the grounding things we do with him pretty much every morning is we'll sit down and have breakfast together, and then we'll play a game of dominoes, and that kind of gets his brain going and gets him keyed in. And this morning with Ari Rain here, we didn't play dominoes, so I've noticed when he doesn't have something like that that he can relate to, you know, that we do regularly and keeps his brain engaged, that sometimes he just kind of spaces out and he gets a little confused. He's not sure where he is or what's going on. You know, again, he's lived in this home for 50 plus years, but sometimes isn't sure where to go to get to the kitchen, even though it's on the same level and just down the hall. So if everybody would, we'd appreciate you just holding the space for him. And we have a pretty sweet time with him. He's, you know, 88 for the kind of challenges that he's got. He is one of the sweetest men I've ever known. He's just really pretty amazing. And, of course, we're blessed because a lot of folks, when you get to that age, get kind of cantankerous and not very nice to be around. And Gene's dad's just the opposite of that. He's just such a gentle soul. We're blessed to get to hang out and play with him. And then, of course, there's Arya Rain. How's he doing, sweetie?
He had an accident, so I got him a change of clothes. And he's not sure what day it is or where he is. And so I told him after the radio show I'd get him outside because it's a pretty day here.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to him about that earlier this morning. maybe you sit down beforehand and play a game of dominoes with him, and that might help to get him grounded too.
Yeah.
And so we've got about 25 minutes. Oh, well, let's say hello.
Area code 314, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Michael. It's Doug.
Hey, Doug, welcome. Good to hear your voice. How are things in your world? What's happening? Where are you, by the way?
I'm in St. Louis.
So St. Louis. How did your house do with all the rains up there this year?
So far, may it continue, no problems.
Yeah, may it continue. You got my support. When I saw what happened, that flood, that was, oh, man, that was pretty heavy duty. So I certainly won't envy or didn't envy what you had to do to rescue that house, but I hold it as safe. So what's on your mind today?
Yeah. What direction do I want to go in here? I've been doing worksheets and a reality management wake-up sheets, rather, I should say, I guess. And I just feel like there's a whole lot of process going on and restructure and, you know, things like that. And one of the I could take any one of these and discuss it and go deeper. But this morning I was working on, I had a brief conversation with Diane and me an idea, and I went with it, and I'm working with this idea that what I started out with is how I have a sense that I can't make her happy, that I can't make Diane happy, and she suggested, well, maybe that's related to your mom. So I did a worksheet on mom, and I completed it.
Of course, it's true you can't make her happy. There's no question about that.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I mean, happiness is an inside job. It doesn't come from what anybody does. So, you know, any more than she can make you happy, or she can make you unhappy, and vice versa. Just, you know, doesn't happen.
Exactly.
But of course, this mind is the big trickster that keeps us believing something else. But did you find some gold in doing your worksheet around your mom?
It sure feels like it, because since I finished this worksheet an hour ago, I don't know, in some sort of a state. You know, the bottom line is that I felt like in 5B that no doubt I will die, you know, if mom isn't happy with me, and I must please her to survive. And I just see this dynamic with women so strongly right now, and I just feel this process of trying to let that churn through me, and it feels like it's really strong, just confounding, sort of confusing energy, and I have to be, you know, a good person, a good boy in mom's mind in order to be okay, in order to survive. And I never really, I guess, thought too much about that until doing this worksheet. But I'm just...
Cool. How about a mind shifter?
Okay. Yep. Because that's what I'm looking for. It's just kind of the next little
cool
thing to do here. And to do energy, which is what I want to do. Okay.
Okay. So how about the more often... I do behaviors.
Okay.
The more often I do behaviors, that bring up displeasure in my mom and Diane. Pardon me, let me change that a little bit. My mom, comma, Diane, and myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The more deeply I'm cherished.
Okay.
Your mind's kind of a big BS for that one.
Right, it does.
So then it'll work perfectly. And for anybody who's listening, just to explain a little bit about this mind shifter tool, is, you know, our definition of a mind shifter is it's a thought about an issue around in your life around which you have negative thoughts, and it's the opportunity to surface, process, and release the negative thoughts. And so you pick a thought that is sure to trigger the hidden parts of the mind. And, of course, in this case, the hidden thoughts and dynamics of displeasure of mom, of self, of Diane, and then starting to look at being cherished in the context of that is going to show every time probably you've ever been disapproved of with the behavior. And then, you know, so the way you use a mind shifter, and again, I know you understand this, Doug, but just for anybody else who's listening, if that thought resonates for you, you take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle of the page, write the thought on the left, and then on the right-hand side, just start to do a brain dump. Just write whatever comes up. You know, and it might be, well, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. I've always, you know, they've never tried. I've been, you know, pushed away. I've been hit. I've been, you know, whatever. And you just let your mind run with that and run out of things to write. Write the mind shifter again. And, you know, it sounds like, Doug, from your the reaction that I heard to the mind shifter, that, you know, probably this would be a good one to set aside 3 or 4 hours and just sit and write with and see what work comes up for you in that.
Okay. That sounds great. We'll do that, see what happens.
Cool. So what did surface? Anything to share at this point that came up immediately in response?
Well, I started here. It just was like that. Well, that's insane in a deep way. It's a great way to get killed.
Wow. Now, there's a piece of gold, Doug. There's a piece of gold. The fact that your unconscious mind, and notice that earlier you talked about you'll die, and now you're talking about being killed in response to that thought. That's a really, really profound direction to take your work in this regard.
Yeah, well, whatever is the unconsciousness around it, it feels very deep and you know, just, yeah. And I do often have die as self-punishment thought. It's on the worksheet.
So how about adding to the end of the mind shifter then? So I am cherished.
The more deep. Add. Though I am cherished.
Add after I am cherished.
Okay.
And get support for full aliveness.
Okay.
Good. There you go. Now, take a look at that way your throat just closed up. And what is your throat saying it isn't allowed to say, doesn't want to say, that you're not allowed to access?
Well, any rebellion will get me killed.
Well, it's pretty heavy duty. The thought comes that perhaps there's a genetic component to that.
That could well be.
Yeah, that very possibly there's in your genetic history someone, displeasuring someone else in the family and literally being killed.
Yeah, I just underlined the word rebellion because that stands out for me, really does. That's bringing up sadness and emotion, and you know, it's political. I've always.
So I've got another. Have I got a mind shifter for you?
Okay.
It's safe.
Another one. Okay.
Another one. You get a bonus today, Doug.
Okay.
It's safe, comma, healing.
Okay.
And life enhancing. And life enhancing for me to surrender. To the authority. Did you use glass of water, Doug? Got a full throat close on that one, eh? All right. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting that what happens for me about that is that the very first impulse was, yes, that's absolutely correct, that's the only way for me to live. And then right on the heels of that, which was accompanied by a certain amount of relief, and then right on the heels of that was, and no, I won't. You know,
like... How about adding again, and I don't do this very often. In fact, I don't remember the last time I added something to a mind shifter once it was given, but how about adding to this one at the end of it, comma, and it enhances my prosperity.
Okay.
So where's your mind go as you take that controlled breath? It sounded from here, my listening to it, it sounded like it was a measured, purposeful breath. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it just feels like everything's being taken away, or everything will be taken away. I have, yeah, the thought, the first writing is no.
So that's huge, Doug. That's huge. I mean, what I hear you saying is that what your unconscious mind believes is that if you surrender in relationship, your life will end. Wow. I mean, literally. We talk about throwing a monkey wrench into creating relationship.
I'm a little confused right now because I don't see. I can see where maybe that's true, but I haven't got any awareness of that. It's more like, if I surrender to political authority, my life will end and all my property will be taken. You know, I just like it's about the two are a little blended together here because, you know, we've got these two, I'll just say the authority. Okay, so now I'm connecting how you got that. When I see this word authority in this second mind shifter and I have separated them, it is about the political authority. I mean, there isn't even any possibility that it's any other authority. So
yeah.
So I'm seeing that word as not being the same as the authority in the first one, you know.
Mm-hmm. So can I offer perhaps another place that it's connected in the filing system in your mind?
Yeah.
If I do what Mom, surrogate Diane, says, they become my authority. And the link back would be, if you have this belief that to surrender to political authority means death and loss of everything, then if that links back to whoever tells me what to do, this woman in my life is the authority, and it's going to cost me everything. And I'll just offer that from where I sit, from where I breathe in this one, is I can kind of relate to that and remember shades of that in my own life. I mean, I can remember when there was a time when I could not hardly even utter the word. It was like marriage. And as I've worked through that, as I taught the Healing Through Relationships workshop and chose to do the healing work through my relationships, for me, the surrender to that has become one of the most profound, one of the most powerful, one of the most life-enhancing experiences that I've had. So what was that?
Well, it's my mind trying to imagine that possibility. And before that was, you know, the acknowledgement that, yeah, I've had an issue with that. You know, I've had, without question, the mind has had thoughts that, and my experience is, and I could find other worksheets around her, I'm sure, where though I'm wanting the relationship to continue very much, it does. It's like it's just been a given to me that I have to give up everything to have it. Everything.
Wow.
Has to be given up. And
so, are you willing to receive another thought?
Okay.
If you choose to do that in your relationship, that's when everything will be given to you. Because right now, nothing is the way you want it to be. And you're fighting your own unconscious dynamics. And yes, you'll give it all up. But when you give it up, it will all be returned to you in ways that your carbon-based memory can't even start to inform you about or imagine. And my offering is that the only reason it seems unsafe is because of these unresolved dynamics that, as I say, sound like they're perhaps generational. So I breathe with you. And I would suggest that perhaps when the show's complete, you take the recording and edit this section out of the rest of the show have put it on your phone and have it available for you to listen to repeatedly as you do these mind shifters and these worksheets. And just watch the monumental change that will happen as you do.
Okay.
So I'm going to hold the space, and then I'm going to invite Jeannie to step into the conversation. Miss Jeannie, have any thoughts, Dad?
No, but I think that that's a good idea to download portion of the radio show and re-listen to it, and you'll probably, you know, get more and more insights as you go with that. So. I know Michael needs to go ahead and go. He has a meeting, but Doug, is there anything else I can assist you with?
I don't know. I just thinking, oh, that's a sweet, you know, sweet offer, you know. I'll just go ahead and put on here, since I'm going to be listening to it later, that it feels like, you know, I don't know, that's just what I'm feeling right now.
Right.
It all has to do with the king. And
then just look at who in your life do you give the position of being king. You know, we give power away to different people in their lives, and so you could just look and say, you know, okay, who is it that I consider to be in the position of king over me, be it male or female, and then do worksheets around that person too. And just breathe into that space of, you know, being underneath a king.
Yeah, it's political authority.
Right.
I'm relating to specific political characters, but I just like political characters, the way people, Second Amendment, and like the one in the White House, right? Oh, and his cohort up there who always laughs and hides behind a mask, and, you know, all these people that want to keep people hiding behind masks. You know, I just I have a lot of charge around what's happening.
All right. And so, you know, I use the example a lot when I'm working with people. You know, in the scriptures, it tells us a story of Yeshua walking across the water. There's this huge storm going on, and the disciples are afraid. They're in a boat. And Peter looks at Yeshua, and he says, I know if you ask me to step out that I can walk on water. And he tells him to come on. And so he steps out. Now, nothing has changed in the storm. It is still rock and rolling, the waves, the wind, everything else. The only thing that changes is his mind and his focus. And as long as he's focused on walking towards Yeshua, he walks on water. And then when he starts looking at the circumstances, he sinks. So, you know, we all go through storms in our life. You're going through one right now. I go through a different storm here than you go through there. But they're all storms in their lives, and we can either walk on water or we can sink. Our time has run out on the show, so it's going to cut us off here in just a second. But I just hold the space that you can, you know, stay centered within your being. And, yes, we can do things to change what's going on outwardly, but the biggest thing is change what's going on inside and walk on water in the midst of your storm.
Right. All right.
Thank you. Take care. Blessings.
Thank you.